I'm Michael Williams from Blueprint for Living, and one of my absolute favourite conversations I've had on the show this year was with the Reverend Tim Costello. Tim is one of this country's most celebrated voices when it comes to questions of ethics, of faith, of leadership. And on Blueprint, he was talking about the trip and the place that changed his life and made him the man he is today. It's a wonderful conversation, and I'm looking forward to sharing it with you.
I wish I knew how it would feel to be free. I wish I could break all the chains holding me.
It's never a bad time to listen to Miss Nina Simone, and there she is with I Wish I Knew How It Would Feel to Be Free, a song that makes me feel pretty free and makes our guest right now think of Zurich in Switzerland, of all places. Our guest is the CEO of World Vision Australia, an Australian Baptist minister, author of many books, Tim Costello. Tim, thank you for joining us.
A pleasure.
And thank you for bringing us Nina Simone. Why Nina?
Well, I was back in Zurich visiting my old theological college where I studied from 1981 to 1984 with my wife, and we had picked up, visiting that place for the first time after 35 years, and picked up a Nina CD. And the memories of wishing to be free just soared back, because we had many students from Soviet countries whose whole thirst was to be free, Russians and Yugoslavs and Poles who were studying in Zurich with us. And we in the West sort of had a suffocating feeling about materialism, about not being soul free. So from very different perspectives, we came together and formed intimate friendships over 4 years of studying, and freedom was right at the heart of it.
Tell me about your first time in Zurich, your first time arriving there when you were there in the seminary.
Well, it's a chocolate box, picture perfect, and you simply can't believe that you can be in such an ideal place. People say to me, you know, how come you got, after practicing law, to study theology in Zurich of all places? Well, I won a scholarship. And it was that heart of Europe, which was neutral, still some part of the EU, different, hardworking. Yep, the trains all ran on time. But we were plunged into a student body of 80 people, with students from Africa and Indonesia, and as I said, from Soviet bloc countries, and just about every European country, all in our 20s. Profound ideals that we could actually, if we could just understand how the world works and get our heads around it, then we could really change it. So those ideals you're absolutely on about, but ideals tempered by Cold War, by nuclear weapons in East and West Germany, as they were then, all honed in on each other, NATO and Warsaw Pact, and a pessimism that if someone pushed that trigger, all our ideals and our world would be shattered. So it was a very idealistic time of youth, and complex time, as we actually asked the question, what does it mean to be free? What does it mean? I wish you could understand what it feels to be me, or what it's like to be me. It was the first time I actually was confronted with Africans and Indonesians and people out of poverty, which really set up my future work in World Vision. So the seeds were all sown there.
How much did you have to go away to have that kind of insight?
I think it was almost 100% needed. You don't realize that you live in a bubble. And when you are in a bubble, the in-group bias of people who think like you and see the world like you is so all-consuming. To actually be out of that bubble and to see how Africans think and how they at times are bewildered by our culture, our individualism, what they'd call our selfishness, was really to prick the bubble. From a faith perspective, you simply don't understand your faith until you live in another culture. I had grown up believing that Christianity was how Australian churches that I'd grown up in saw the faith until I discovered that Scandinavian Baptists had very different attitudes about premarital sex. Italian Baptists all voted communist, and I just knew that God was in heaven, that Bob Menzies was in the lodge, and that all true Christians voted conservative in Australia. Now, it wasn't Stalinist communists, it was Berlinger, more softer communism that the Italians voted for, but they said only communists will clean up the corruption of the mafiosia and the Christian Democrats and even the Catholic Church. So my politics, my understanding of morality was all reshaped by being out of the bubble and thinking about my faith.
How many years were you in the seminary?
4 years.
And then did you come straight back to Australia afterwards, or was that it? Were you outward bound from there on in?
I came straight back to Australia and opened a little legal practice in a little Baptist church in St Kilda, which only had 8 members. They couldn't pay me. That's why I opened the legal practice. So my storefront work with legal work with sex workers and people from criminal backgrounds, and my pastoral work took off and, you know, eventually saw me become mayor of St Kilda. In fact, I'm the last mayor ever of St Kilda. I did such a good job, they abolished the whole council, although it had something to do with government amalgamations. But I came back a dramatically different person because I had actually learnt to empathise. And that's what I love about Nina's song. It's not just you have to understand me. She sings, I wish I could share all the love in my heart for you, and the bars, the chains that separate us can break down. That's actually what happened for me in Zurich.
I wish I could break all the chains holding me. I wish I could say all the things that I should say.
Tim, how much did what you'd learned in Zurich, that desire for empathy, how much was that challenged by the things that disappointed you about the society you came back to, the one that you'd belong from? Because that kind of optimism and that international outlook wouldn't have been met across the board.
In terms of Australia, yes, I was shocked that we were so insular, that we had so little idea of how profoundly blessed we were. The only nation with a whole continent to itself and by any standard, fabulously rich. And the whinging and the sense of I'm a victim, the grievance culture was even true when I came back then, which I suddenly knew was a profound loss of perspective, which my World Vision work has only further reinforced.
How itchy were your feet once you were back? I mean, becoming the mayor, all of that stuff would have kept you fairly grounded for a bit.
In my work as a pastor in St Kilda, I was locally based, but to go up to the Philippines, to live in slums, to really explore that sense that you only see reality from where you sit, or literally from where you lay your head down. And that sense of empathy and imagination and exposing myself so I could understand did start very, very early.
Part of World Vision's work, you would find yourself in some of the most horrific, tragic refugee camps around the world. How has that shaped and affected you in recent years?
It's profoundly shaped me. The part of it is the shadow side guilt, that when I can get on a plane and leave, and am I up to describing their situation to either raise funds or give them hope, because I know from the look in their eyes I am their only hope, and I never really feel quite up to it, that I've not done enough, that I've dishonoured that hope I saw in their eyes. Part of it's, though, the extraordinary insight, and again I go back to Nina Simone's song, that when you communicate to someone that you have a sense of what it means for them to be who they are, whatever the bad cards they've drawn, the last ticket in the lottery of latitude, as I call it, because of where they were born and the chances they were denied, when you have the solidarity and sympathy and empathy to be there, quite apart from the help you're bringing, but to be there, to deeply respect them, to show that it's an equal a relationship, not a top-down charity relationship. That actually is pure gift. The solidarity people feel that you try to understand, that you were real in identifying with their struggle, even though you didn't have the magic wand. That is really the great gift that I've learnt, that at the end of the day, humans, quite apart from solving their problems, want to know, have I been noticed? Do I actually matter to someone else? And that observation that I'm here, you matter, I want to know your story, I respect it, has been very profound for me.
That sounds to me like it would be a restoration of your faith in people. What does it do to your wider faith?
It strengthens my wider faith. I've always believed that humans have this innate need to find meaning and purpose. I've just written a book called Faith, and it's really saying the heart sees way before the head sees. The heart understands way before the head understands that life isn't lived in a lineal, logical way. It's if you find purpose, it's because these are matters of the heart. And my work has absolutely strengthened that faith.
But Tim, thinking about your experience back in Zurich in the seminary and the people from all different parts of the world listening to one another and trying to engage in acts of supreme empathy, you must look at our political discourse, our kind of broader geopolitics and despair sometimes at our capacity to do just that, to empathize, to hear one another, to see one another. How do you get up and keep doing it every day when, I don't know, the head and the heart both seem to be a long way away from what we're doing?
Yeah, it is always a contest, and it's the contest to remind us that despite that desire to feel we're superior, you know, what's a better car or a better house about, that somehow, what's Olympic gold about? I love the Campbell sisters and winning gold in the relay, but I noticed they were born in Malawi and they came out when they were 7 and 9, and Malawi's never won any medal in any Olympics. And shouldn't they also have a little bit of our thanks? So that sense that reflected superiority because Australia does great in Olympic support, in Olympic gold. I think the struggle to actually say, no, we're all fragile humans trying to get by. And deep down, we all know this. And the barriers that come when we try and suggest that somehow we are superior and therefore can be indifferent to someone else's situation is a huge struggle, a huge contest. That contest is always on.
So, Tim, take me back to that car with you and your wife driving around Switzerland last June. Decades on from your time in the seminary, Nina Simone playing on the player. How have you been changed?
Well, I had tears in my eyes as I listened to that song, because I know it has been a yearning to be free, and free in the sense of not free from, but free for empathy and love, and free for the best of who I can be. And I think that freedom for is what touch me. All the experiences that have happened since, both good and bad, really have been an inner exploration of what it means to be authentically free.
Tim Costello, thank you so much for your time.
A pleasure.
Tim Costello and his new book is called Faith. I'm Michael Williams, and for more great summer listening, subscribe to the Blueprint for Living podcast via iTunes or the ABC Radio app. Happy holidays. Be.